We're happy to bring in John Bloom. He's the pregame and postgame host for the Suns. He's also a Bay Area guy. Hey, John, how you doing, man? Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John, and good to be with you, Matt. And, huge game tonight. We've been kind of waiting for this one. It's been circled on some of our calendars for a while, especially me, having grown up out there in the Bay Area and still been surrounded by Warriors fans my entire existence, even though I did switch over to the Suns as a 13-year-old, and now flash forward 30 years later, this is my 15th year working for the team that I got to grow up rooting for. And it's all Kevin Johnson's fault, if you want the quick story. That's why I became a Suns fan from the Bay Area. KJ was my favorite player growing up. Both my parents went to Cal. And there you have it. And now here we are watching the two best teams in all of basketball get set to go head-to-head for the first time this season.
Let me ask you this. I've been a little surprised at how much the Warrior fans are back into this team. There's an excitement about this team that I think we didn't see coming. We thought they might be okay. We didn't think they'd be 18-2 okay. And, you know, we're taking calls today, and there's a lot of people that are really excited about the game. Is it that way right now in Phoenix, or are you guys a little jaded now that you got to the NBA Finals last year?
Well, they were definitely hurt, I think, is maybe the word that comes to mind about this fan base when this season started. Still getting over the pain of going up 2-0 in the finals and then losing 4 straight to the Bucks, and yet, you know, that was something that has been explained in a variety of ways, and I think people have grown to let that hurt kind of wane away, and what makes it go away even faster is when you see a team come together as quickly as this one has. Now, you know, they did stumble out of the gates. If 1-3 is stumbling out of the gates, and so they did that, but now to win 16 in a row, and I know it hasn't been that long for the folks in the Bay Area, and I just feel like you guys sometimes need to be reminded, or not you per se, but maybe some of you listening out there need to be reminded about how lucky you were with this stretch that this group, and you still have a good group left of the group that won titles. But, you know, to start a season 24-0 is just insane, right? We're in the middle of this road trip. I call the games on the road. You're right, I do the pre- and post-game show for home games. But, you know, being out there on this last road trip and having, you know, back-to-back games in New York City and then Brooklyn Friday and Saturday night, and before that having a back-to-back where we left here and went to San Antonio, to play them the next night. And this team doesn't waver. Like, they just show up, they get their job done, and they continue to get wins. And it's not always pretty. It's not always, you know, a piece of art that you want to frame and put on your wall, but it's a W. They end up with more points than the other team does. And I'm wondering, you know, if that was the case when the Warriors got that unbelievable start of 24-0, or if it just felt like they were so dominant that nobody could touch them.
No, it definitely was that, and there was a belief that among them that they had something to prove, because there was a lot of chatter about, well, you won, and it is somewhat, I think, similar to Phoenix. They won the title. I know Phoenix didn't, but you didn't play the Clippers, and you didn't play the Spurs, and Kyrie got hurt, and, you know, there's a little bit of that with the Suns, with guys that kind of went down in some of their playoff series, I think, that's in play. John, I want to ask you about just kind of what's changed since the 1-3 start. They had that awful game at home against Sacramento in the second half, and then Harrison Barnes hits the three. I mean, it was a really, really bad loss. I watched a good chunk of that game, but it's been gravy since then. What flipped from that night?
I think it was mainly defense is the one thing that has been ratcheted up from the first four games. And if you look at the numbers, it plays out that way, because they started out, you know, middle to the bottom of the league. And now here they are, you know, close to the top five in defense already, because they really have gone on a stretch where they've stopped allowing teams to even get to the century mark. And I know that's going to be a huge challenge tonight, because the Warriors score 100 in their sleep and do it every night and have all season. So I don't see that happening, but it has been the calling card for this team since all the way back before last year, since the bubble, you know, in Orlando, which a lot of people forget about. Now, Chris Paul wasn't part of that group. That was Ricky Rubio as the point guard, but that group came together, didn't know what they, you know, were going to be able to pull off, because even if they ran the table, there was no guarantee they'd make the playoffs, and they didn't end up making the playoffs, even though they went 8-0 there. Then they start the season last year 8-8 before they really got it going, and the explanation there was, well, Chris Paul takes a little bit of time to get to know his surroundings before he really kicks things into gear. And boy, did he. Then they go off and rattle off the best record in basketball from then on out, and they haven't stopped since. So this season, that start, that 1-3 start, I think may have been a combination of the short rest, because not only did they make it all the way to the finals, but then they had Devin Booker, their star guard, go to the Olympics and help Team USA win gold. So his summer was even shorter, coupled with the fact that they do have actually two significant rotation pieces that are new, and that's JaVale McGee is the backup big, which you guys are very familiar with, and then they brought in Landry Shamet from Brooklyn, and he's been a big part of their second unit as well. So implementing new pieces that are playing significant time and are big rotation pieces takes some time, and the fact that they were able to come together as quick as they did is pretty impressive.
John Bloom joining us. He's the pre- and post-game host for the Phoenix Suns. Let me ask you about DeAndre Ayton, because when the Warriors are really, really clicking, they have a way of exposing big men in that whatever the big man gets on the offensive end, they exploit worse on the defensive end. Is DeAndre Ayton a player who can kind of make the Warriors pay at the offensive end and yet not be a liability defensively when the Warriors go small?
I think potentially he is. Does that mean that the Warriors aren't going to get one over and make him look silly? No. I mean, that would be silly for me to say, because even the best of the best are going to be made silly by Steph Curry in that offense, And so I think there's an expectation that DeAndre can switch. He's a little bit more switchable than your average big fella. He's almost 7 feet tall, but the way he moves, his length, his ability to recover, all help him, be a little bit better at that than most. It doesn't mean that he's going to not get caught on a switch and get three buried in his mug by Steph. I think that's bound to happen to any big, but the thing that the Suns have going for him is a lot of what the Warriors do too. They've got a lot of switchable parts, and it's led by a guy who's an absolute defensive stalwart, Mikal Bridges, who's just starting to get the kind of love that you might recall when Draymond Green was starting to, throw up those flashing marquee lights. Everybody who's watching basketball, like, look over here, this guy's flat out unbelievable on the defensive side. That's what Mikal Bridges is starting to get, like an early Draymond. Now, Draymond's been doing it a long time, so he's established. But Mikal, if you watch tonight, he's going to get that assignment on Steph. And yeah, no, he's not going to absolutely shut him down. But he will bother him because he's lengthy, he's athletic, and he's smart, and he knows angles, he knows where to be on the floor. But it can't just be him. It's got to be everybody tied on a string. It's something the Warriors do better than any other team in the league, but the Suns aren't that far behind when they're clicking, and DeAndre Ayton is the centerpiece of that. He's the anchor defensively for this team. There's a couple things to that. It's defend the rim as the anchor because you're the last line, but it's also be vocal. And when he's dialed in, when he's locked in and he's vocal and you hear him, they are so good on that side. And that's a big reason why they've rattled off this 16-game win streak.
John, what's your sense of what the Suns are willing to live with as far as the Warriors? And we were going back through the game in San Francisco toward the end of the season a year ago, last season, and Steph Curry had a rough shooting game. That the Suns did a nice job on him, but Wiggins went for 38, and the Warriors wound up winning. What's the concern level for the others, or is it just you got to pick your poison and live with somebody else trying to beat you? And who are the Suns comfortable with maybe trying to let beat them?
Yeah, I think that's also a good question. When it comes to the game plan, there's no doubt who's at the top of the list, and then there's a significant gap, right, behind Steph. But I don't think that they go into it saying, hey, we need to shut Steph Curry down and let everybody else on this team beat us, because like you said, they remember that game as well, and they wanted that game. That's not like a situation where the Warriors were playing harder because it meant more to them. The Suns were still fighting for the top seed in the West at that point. So that was a meaningful game for both teams. It's a good reference point, to see how they face each other at a, decent, point of basketball for both teams, although I think you would agree that the Warriors have taken it up a notch since then. And I would also say that I think the Suns, just as a comfort level with what they're doing, what they were able to accomplish in the playoffs, also put them at a different level right now, too. So fascinating to see what their approach is tonight. But I do believe that, they're going to try to do what they do. And that'll be what they say to me, too, when I ask them before the game. It's going to be, yeah, we're just going to play Suns women's basketball, it's not necessarily as much about the Jordan Pools and the Andrew Wiggins of the world. It's more about us playing the way we need to play. And if we do that, then we should have some success tonight.
John, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Have fun at the game
tonight. And by the way, when I say us, you know, I'm not one of those guys who includes my – I was paraphrasing. I hope everybody caught that. I'm not one of those broadcasters that's that ridiculously large of a homer. Although, you know, Mark Willard will tell you, I've been pulling for Planet Orange since we met as freshmen at San Mateo High School. So this thing goes way back. But thanks for having me on today, guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Appreciate you. John Bloom.